Good evening, and welcome to a one-night stand with the big bands. Embraceable You, the theme song of Bobby Hackett, certainly one of the greatest musicians of the big band era, extending from the 30s all the way through the 70s. Bobby Hackett, our guest tonight on a one-night stand with the big bands, brought to you by the Bushnell Memorial, where the big show of 1936 will feature many of the big names of vaudeville, silent films, the Follies, and the early days of radio on June 13th. And by Russo's Chevrolet in Windsor Locks, where you'll find special bargain prices tomorrow, Wednesday, and Thursday. Good evening and welcome to A One-Night Stand, tonight featuring Bobby Hackett. This is Arnold Dane. Bobby was in the area not long ago to make an appearance at Lake Compounds with Bobby Kay and his orchestra for the benefit of the Connecticut Big Band Society. He visited our studios. We sat here in Studio One at Broadcast House, spinning a few tales and a few records, too. And it'll be a pleasure to share that conversation and that music with you tonight. Remember when entertainment meant the silent movies or a vaudeville show? Or if you were a little more daring, the Follies? When a dime bought you a whole afternoon of pleasure? Remember the faces that made those shows great? Child star Jackie Coogan, deadpan comedian Virginia O'Brien, Ziegfeld Follies performer Cass Daly? Well, many of the great names of years gone by are coming to the Bushnell June 13th for the big show of 1936. You'll see Jackie Coogan, Virginia O'Brien, and Cass Daly, plus Mack Sennett girl Sally Rand, singer Beatrice Kay, MGM star and Donkey Serenade singer Alan Jones, the Ink Spots, a King Kong, a Rin Tin Tin, and the Panama Francis Orchestra, all recreating the spirit of vaudeville, silent films, the Follies, and the golden age of radio. That's the big show of 1936, Tuesday evening, June 13th at 8:30 at the Bushnell Memorial in Hartford. For ticket information, call 246-6807. Now let's begin our conversation with Bobby Hackett, tonight's guest on a one-night stand with the big bands. Bobby, I didn't realize you are a New Englander. Where were you born?
Providence, Rhode Island.
Oh, you're right from this neck of the woods, then. You live in Cape Cod now.
Oh, yeah.
And you're not retired by any means, are you, Bob?
Never. I dread the word. Yeah. I can't imagine not playing a cornet.
Good for you.
I'll die playing.
Do you play now? Would you consider yourself a studio musician?
No, I'm just a freelance musician, I guess you would say. Well, I've worked all the studios in New York, not all of them. Luckily, I got the best one. I worked at ABC there for 17 years under Paul Whiteman.
Have you always played trumpet?
Just had to get out of there. Well, I started with the cornet, and I flirted with the trumpet. And I liked your opening line, the trumpet and the cornet, because the instrument I play, there's a little bit of a little difference in the sound. You're splitting hairs, but there is a difference to a trained ear.
And I think even my ear can discern the difference. How would you describe the difference in tone anyway, Bobby?
Well, there are many ways of putting it. I think the simplest way is that from the player's point of view, like when you play it, a cornet is closer to you and consequently warmer. It's a more intimate sound. You keep in touch with yourself more. The trumpets are meant to project, and they're like a braggadocio instrument, brassy and all that. But I prefer the cornet.
I think warmth of tone probably does sum it up. You play
I heard Louis Armstrong when I was 14 years old, and I figured, well, the cornet is a good cop-out. I'll never be the best trumpet player. It's true.
You selected well. You did play cornet, didn't you, in that marvelous series of records that you made with Jackie Gleason, some of those rich, warm, beautiful, lush things?
Well, thank you, but I don't remember which. I had a trumpet on some of them and a cornet on the other ones.
Oh. Did Gleason, is he a good conductor? Did he actually lead the band, or was this just a kick for him?
Well, I must tell you the truth. Jackie Gleason couldn't conduct traffic through the Holland Tunnel in New York at 3:30 a.m. on Sunday. And I have a lot of different answers for that. Sometimes I say, was Toscanini funny? No, it was a toy with Jackie.
Yeah.
He had the money to make it happen, and I think he deserves a lot of credit for having the imagination to know that the people would like that kind of music, because every record company turned this album down. I'll never forget, Jackie put up the money, and he had a party at the Park Sheraton. They had representatives from the so-called major companies, right? And every one of them laughed when they heard the music. He played the reggae, and everybody's saying, that's too slow, you need a girl singer. So all the usual geniuses.
Uh-huh. You know. All the experts.
So for a while, he was stuck with it. And then one fellow by the name of Bobby Brenner, a friend of ours, he worked for MCA at the time, I think, and he knew somebody at Capitol Records. So after a lot of pressure, he got them to a point where they invested $1,000. That's what they thought of the potential. And the rest is history. You know, when the albums came out, they changed the whole music world. They were the first instrumental records to make that much noise ever.
Bobby, from that album, I had you look this over and kind of pick the one that you thought might be prettiest. And let's listen to it now. It's called Time on My Hands, done by Bobby Hackett on cornet with the Jackie Gleason Orchestra. We'll continue our conversation with Bobby Hackett in just a moment on A One-Night Stand with the Big Bands. Tomorrow, Wednesday, and Thursday, they'll be big days at Russo Chevrolet in Windsor Locks. If you've been thinking about a new Chevy, they're days you'll want to remember. For 3 days and 3 days only, Russo will be offering brand new Chevrolets at bargain prices. Perhaps you'll choose the Impala. It's easy to drive, exceptionally roomy and comfortable, with standard power front disc brakes, power steering, and automatic turbo hydromatic transmission. Or what about Caprice? the car that lets you enjoy the sumptuous surroundings of expensive luxury cars without spending nearly as much. Then there's the sleek, smooth-riding Bel Air. Whatever your choice, you'll save by buying at Russo tomorrow, Wednesday, or Thursday. And you can buy knowing you're buying from a dealer who cares about you after the sale. Mention WTIC and you'll receive an additional $50 off the low sale price. R-U-S-S-O. Russo Chevrolet. Take the Bradley exit from I-91, then the first exit to Russo Chevrolet, directly across from Bradley International in Windsor Locks. Now let's resume our conversation with Bobby Hackett. Bobby, the terms cornet and trumpet are, of course, used interchangeably. How old were you when you began to play?
I think I picked it up when I was around 10 years old, and I got a couple of notes out of it. And then there was a guy in the old neighborhood who showed me a few things. And then I had to put it down. I went to the violin, and I was playing the guitar. And then I picked it up again later when I was about 14. And through the years, I got to a point where I was forced to learn how to play it because I was becoming a little bit known, and I had to learn how.
Were you blessed with that beautiful tone naturally, or is that something that you could work on?
No, it's just something that happens. I don't know how to explain it, but you see, an instrument, to me, is an extension of your voice. All it is an amplifier. And the mouthpiece is the preamplifier, the bell is the speaker, and so forth. But it's a sound extension. And the way you blow into it, that's how it comes out. That's why everybody sounds different, thank God. I got into a thing with it. There's a man in Columbus, Ohio, I forget it. His name is Getz. And he's a musicologist, and he has the greatest collection in the world of brass instruments, and a very interesting guy. Whenever I'm there, I manage to drop in and spend some time with him. And he pointed out in different schools of music, like the Italians. The Italians are notorious for good tone and a musical sound, whereas the Germans, they outdo them in speed and execution. And it all relates to the language. The German language is staccato, and the Italian would be more legato. French, which is my favorite music of all. They're my favorite composers, and to me it's just the best music in the world, like Ravel and Debussy, because it's warmth and there's a lot of romance in it. Mm-hmm. Again, it relates to the language. It's true.
Yes, it is. You mentioned that you had played some guitar, and I was reading George T. Simon's book again, The Big Bands, in anticipation of our meeting today. And he said it was amazing to everybody who finally realized that the great Bobby Hackett was joining the great Glenn Miller Band. And of all things, there he is sitting down strumming the guitar instead of playing cornet. And your guitar playing, George Simon described as being adequate mediocrity.
That's what it was. If you look at it now, that's what it was. Since then, thousands of great guitar players have popped up. Mm-hmm. And I never really had eyes. I chose to concentrate on a cornet.
I think George T. said that at the time that you became available and joined the Miller Band, which was July 10th of 1941, incidentally, you'd also had some dental surgery done or something like that, and you couldn't blow the horn for a while.
That's what happened, yeah. And I had a dear friend by the name of Cy Shribman who used to look out for me, and he got me with the Glenn Miller Band. And another reason was that Glenn had four good trumpet players, mm-hmm. and he didn't want to change anybody. So the only way I could come aboard was to bring the guitar. It was my ace in the hole, and it still is. If somebody hits me in the mouth, I'm a guitar player again.
You did some great things, too. You were in on some of the original Glenn Miller recordings that we remember so well. For example, you played guitar, non-amplified guitar, on American Patrol. If we listen to it closely, can we hear you strumming?
Well, let me tell you about the non-amplified. Glenn always wanted me to get an electric guitar. Mm-hmm. This was before anybody heard of them, you know. And I tried to go along with him. He wanted me to play solos on it, and I didn't have any eyes for that. I didn't want to get that far into it because mm-hmm. it would distract from playing a cornet. But I remember getting an amplifier. It weighed about 60 pounds, and I carried it all over the country and never plugged it in. Never connected it.
Another one that you did with the Glenn Miller Band, in addition to American Patrol and many, many others, was String of Pearls, and you played both guitar and trumpet, or cornet on that one.
Well, I started out at the beginning of the arrangement. I played the trumpet, and rather the guitar, and then I'd have to switch to the cornet to play the solo, and then back to the guitar.
Is that one of your favorite solos, that cornet solo on String of Pearls with the Miller Band? Is that one of the better things that you did with him?
I'm kind of glad I played it because it was picked up by, it became a part of the song, and everyone who played the arrangement of String of Pearls, it's kind of an inside musical compliment. But everybody played the solo. It was printed in the stock arrangement, and all the trumpet players had to learn it. And I've heard it done about every way that it could be done. Somebody played it with the saxophone section. Larry Elgott, I think, Les Elgott. Harry James played it with the brass section. And it was quite a compliment coming from other musicians. You know?
Was it ad-libbed originally, or is that something that you had worked on?
Oh, yeah, I had to read it from a guitar part. It just said switch the cornet, and it gave me the chords, and I played what I thought. It was a chord sequence that you'd have to know chords to understand, but you just go up and down. It's really just a little exercise. But I'll never forget the first time I played it was at our rehearsal when Jerry Gray brought the arrangement in. After we got through, Glenn said to me, and I don't believe in playing anything the same way twice if I can help it. That's part of the charm of jazz, to take chances and ad lib. But at the end of the first reading of this tune, Glenn says to me, "Hey, Hack," he says, "do you remember what you played there?" I said, "Well, roughly." He says, "I think you ought to play it that way every time." I said, "Well, sure, thank you. Always glad to get advice from Glenn Miller." And that's the way it was. But then I played it so many times that in the English recording that we made, I played it backwards just to break the monotony. Then we re-recorded it only a few weeks ago with the Glenn Miller Band, Buddy DeFranco, and I tried to play it like from the center to either end. It starts, originally it was ba-ba-da-be-doo-da-dee-da-da. In the English, I played ba ba da da lo di oo da la. I went up instead of down. Now I try to get it halfway. I went ba be di da e di a e a. It was funny.
Becoming a more and more complicated exercise then.
Well, it has to change. You can't keep it the way it
was. That
was
one of the things that some of the people who played with Miller said that it was kind of maddening. He would hire the best musicians available. And they'd ad-lib a solo that was great for the first time they ad-libbed it on a record, but after that, he would expect them to repeat it in personal appearances. And I guess it was kind of time-worn to keep playing it over and over the same
way. That was the only time that he ever asked me to repeat it, because he thought it fit the arrangement and so forth. And he was right, as usual. It was a hit.
Yes.
They're still playing it. Any band plays it, I think they use that solo somewhere. Mm-hmm. The only exception was Benny Goodman.
For obvious reasons. What was it like to play in the Glenn Miller band? Was he a difficult man to work for? I guess you've played with everybody at one time or another.
Oh, well, not everybody, but Glenn Miller was a very, very honorable man and a wonderful, wonderful guy. He just wanted good discipline. Is there anything wrong with that? I've heard musicians who don't like him, but actually he was probably the most successful musician of all time, popular music, American music. Naturally, a lot of guys envy that because he had more than they had. But he was wonderful. I felt it was a great honor to play with him, for him. And we had a kind of a man-to-man feeling that was unusual, too. Like the last 20 minutes of every night that we ever played, he would have me go down front with him when the band would start packing, and we'd play duets for the last 20 minutes. He'd play the melody on the trombone and I'd make up obligatos. And that was his greatest kicks. That's the only reason he had me around, really. He didn't need me. He didn't need anybody. But I was like a luxury to him.
There's a certain mystique, I think, attached more with Glenn Miller's music than anybody else from the big band era, that there is a certain something about Glenn Miller's music that really, I guess, is reminiscent.
He came up with a magic sound. I remember a time when the band first hit. See, I knew Glenn when he just started out to put that band together. And he tried to get all his favorite musicians to go with him, but at the time he didn't have any money, and he asked me to join him then. I said, Glenn, I'd love to, but I have to make more money than that because I have a wife and a couple of children, and you understand, you know. Then he became successful. He hit the jackpot, and I was the only guy who he would let join the band after having turned him down at the original time. Mm-hmm. Everybody wanted to be with the band.
Sure.
And he was one of those guys who said, well, you know, where were you when I needed you? Mm-hmm. And I was the only exception that could go with him.
He stands high above the alien city, perched at the very top of the Empire State Building. He has carried with him a girl whose blonde beauty has touched his savage heart. He thumps his chest and roars defiance at planes circling just outside his massive paws. He's King Kong, Hollywood's greatest gorilla, and he's being recreated on the Bushnell stage June 13th. Yes, King Kong, along with numerous big names from vaudeville, the silent screen, the Follies, and the golden age of radio, will be bringing back the good old days of entertainment to the Bushnell. You'll see faces you probably enjoyed years ago. Jackie Coogan, one-time child star and a favorite of many today. Cast Daly of the Ziegfeld Follies. Sally Rand, fan dancer at the 1933 World's Fair. Plus, singer Beatrice Kay, deadpan comedian Virginia O'Brien, MGM star and donkey serenade singer Alan Jones, the Ink Spots, a Rin Tin Tin, and the Panama Francis Orchestra. You won't want to miss the big show of 1936, Tuesday evening, June 13th, at the Bushnell Memorial in Hartford. You're listening to a one-night stand with the big bands. Tonight's special guest, Bobby Hackett. And our program is being brought to you on 1080 Radio, WTIC in Hartford, Connecticut, by the Bushnell Memorial, where the big show of 1936 is coming June 13th, and by Russo Chevrolet in Windsor Locks with special sale prices for the next 3 days. Bobby, you mentioned the String of Pearls solo on this album that you did recently with an English group. And I know that many people, I know George Simon in his book mentioned your trumpet solo on, or cornet on Rhapsody in Blue, which you did in July of 1942 with Glenn Miller's band. And you've redone it with this English group now, and I think it's even nicer than the original.
Well, it's better music. It's a bigger band. We had 45 men. And it's a much better performance of the Rhapsody in Blue. I don't care what anybody says.
Thank you. Now, Bobby, if we can talk a bit about some of your favorite musicians. As I said, you have, you've been around for 1 or 2 years now, and you've played with all the biggies over the years. And I know it's unfair to ask you to come up with any all-stars in any section, but I know you must have had some particular admiration for Jack Teagarden.
Well, Jack Teagarden, without a doubt, was a thing that could only happen once, and I mean ever. God puts it that way. There's always only one Louis Armstrong. Jack Teagarden is the Louis Armstrong of the trombone. And he'll be around forever, really.
We have one album that I'm particularly fond of, and we'd like to play one selection from it. Can you tell us some of the other personnel? This was really an all-star group, wasn't it?
If I could be brief, I'd like to tell you the story that led up to that.
Sure.
I went out to California to do a big spectacular jazz concert. It was an annual thing that Gene Norman and Frank Bull used to run. And they would import one guy each year, and I happened to be the lucky guy that time. So I'll never forget, I got off the plane, and Frank Bull met me, and he said, "I got a good trombone player for you." I said, "Oh," he said, "Jack Teagarden." I said, "Oh, yeah," because we were buddies, you know. So we go to the rehearsal, and so I said, "What's happening, Jack?" He said, "Well," he says, "I'm thinking of packing it in." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, I don't have any job. Nobody's offering me anything." And at the time, the plum job on the coast, Bob Crosby, had a five-a-week television show in the afternoon, which was a real breeze, and everybody made out like a bandit. And they offered it to Jack, and Jack turned it down. And he was really desperately broke. I said, "What are you turning it down for?" He said, "Well," he said, "you know, Bob Crosby is a very nice kid." He says, "I like the guy." He says, "And if I went on the show, they'd ask me to sing and all that." He says, "And I wouldn't do it to him." That's how ethical and moral the guy was.
Wow.
But I had a little power with Capitol Records from the heat of the Gleason records. Right? So I got up the next morning and I stormed into Capitol Records. And the two guys who ran the album department were friends of mine. They were trying to be nice to me. Like I say, at the time, they might have needed me. So I said, "Look, you guys," I said, "I don't know what you're doing making these funny records that you make." I said, "And you have Jack Teagarden in your backyard." I said, "Are you crazy?" See, Jack couldn't get booked because he wasn't recording. Nobody wanted him. I said, "You have to make an album with Jack." I said, "One of you guys write it." They were both arrangers, Scotty, F.M. Scott and Dave Cavanaugh. I said, "However you split royalties or anything like that is none of my business, but make sure you're going to do it." So the geniuses come out again. One of them said, "Well, is he drinking?" Jack had done some drinking early in his career, and nobody would ever want to forget it. But at this point, he hadn't had a drop of anything for over 10 years. I said, "No, he's not drinking." I said, "Make some records. Make some good. You're going to rake them. Might as well make good ones, right?" So we recorded the Coast concert that same night, and I had Jack do the Coast concert, and I got him something like triple scale, so he grabbed some money from them. And halfway through the Coast concert, Dave Cavanaugh was there, and Jack is singing a Basin Street Blues, Sage James, heart and soul. Mm-hmm. So as an aside, while a piano was playing or something, I went inside and I said to Dave Cavanaugh, I said, "Hey, Dave, you got to redesign this thing." I said, "Jack and I are partners, 50-50. You know, I said, "I can't do this." You know? So he said, "No, don't worry about it." He said, "We're going to give him a contract in the morning." And it put him back in business, and he had a fresh start, and made me very happy to have any part of it. Yeah. I don't go around telling the story. It's only trying to be talk about different things. And Jack Teagarden was very near and dear to me for all our lives, you know.
What about the other personnel on this album? We're going to play one selection from it, "Mama's Gone Goodbye." Who else was with you on that one?
Well, I hope I don't forget anybody, but it was Jack, of course, and we had the late, great Ernie Caceres played baritone and clarinet. Pina Tucko played tenor saxophone and clarinet. Billy Bauer played guitar. And another late, great Gene Schrader played piano. God bless him, he died a couple of weeks ago. And he was a wonderful pianist, a wonderful guy. Buzzy Druten played drums and Jack Lesberg on bass. I think that was it.
Mama's gone goodbye. Bobby Hackett, Jack Teagarden, the orchestra, and Mama's Gone Goodbye. Now you can have a low-mileage 1971 Executive Chevy at a price almost too good to believe. Russo Chevrolet in Windsor Locks has 30 beautiful 71s to clear out, and they'll be on special sale tomorrow, Wednesday, and Thursday. Many have factory air conditioning, and all carry Russo's written 12-month or 12,000-mile warranty. Ask Russo for details. Here's just one of the many bargains. A champagne gold 1971 Chevy Impala Sport Coupe with V8 engine, automatic transmission, power disc brakes, all vinyl interior, AM radio, white walls, and full wheel covers for a low $2,572. That's tomorrow, Wednesday, and Thursday, 3 days only at Russo Chevrolet. Mention WTIC, and you'll receive a $50 discount on one of these cars or on a new Chevrolet. That's Russo, R-U-S-S-O, Russo Chevrolet. Take the Bradley exit from I-91, then the first exit to Russo Chevrolet, directly across from Bradley International in Windsor Locks. And now, Mr. Hackett, like it or not, we're going to play a selection from this album.
I know, Bobby, it's not one of your particular favorites, but I thought since it's in an album called Swing Street, an album that's reminiscent of the 52nd Street Jazz, and since there is one recording in here, which is Bugle Call Rag, and it's listed as being by Bobby Hackett and his orchestra, recorded July 17th of 1939. That's before the Glenn Miller days. Well, it's not one of your favorites, though.
As Marshall Royal would say, those were the bad old days. No, I don't like anything about it, really.
Was this a band that got together just to record, or was this a band that actually appeared
on
Swing
Street?
No,
this was a band. I believe we played Lake Compounce with this band in the old days, yeah? I was reminiscing with Bobby Kay. Last time I was at Lake Compounce, Teddy Wilson and I both had big bands. Were complete fiascos because we just weren't prepared. I went to Antigua with Teddy a couple of times. He has trios, and I have quartets. We learned, right? This reminds me of a line where fans once in a while will come up to you and say, boy, you sound just as good as you did 30 years ago. I say, you mean I've been practicing 30 years for nothing? Nobody wants to admit that you might have improved. You have to come up with funny answers.
Let's listen to that one that features Bobby Hackett and the orchestra. let's see. I can list some of the personnel here. They're not names that ring too many musical bells.
The best thing about that record is the drummer, Don Carter. He was a marvelous drummer, very mysterious guy, friend of Dave Tufts. He came from Chicago, and everybody lost track of him during the war. He must have got killed in the war. But what a drummer this guy was.
That's
perfect.
One thing we can listen for.
If the rest of us played as good as he did, it would have been a good record.
Thank you.
Remember when entertainment meant the silent movies or a vaudeville show? Or if you were a little more daring, the Follies? When a dime bought you a whole afternoon of pleasure? Remember the faces that made those shows great? Child star Jackie Coogan, deadpan comedian Virginia O'Brien, Ziegfeld Follies performer Cass Daly. Well, many of the great names of years gone by are coming to the Bushnell June 13th for the big show of 1936. You'll see Jackie Coogan, Virginia O'Brien, and Cass Daly, plus Max Sennett girl Sally Rand, singer Beatrice Kay, MGM star and Donkey Serenade singer Alan Jones, the Ink Spots, a King Kong, a Rin Tin Tin, and the Panama Francis Orchestra, all recreating the spirit of vaudeville, silent films, the Follies, and the golden age of radio. That's the big show of 1936, Tuesday evening, June 13th at 8:30 at the Bushnell Memorial in Hartford. For ticket information, call 246-6807.
Now, there's another album that came out on Capitol. This is also a few years ago, Bobby. It's called Bobby Hackett at the Embers. Was this recorded live at the Embers, that marvelous old room which exists no longer in New York?
Well, they say it was, but I have to tell you the truth. We did it in the studio. This reminds me of another funny story, if I may. Dave Cavanaugh was always the only talented guy that Capitol Records ever had, but he was the most talented. Mm-hmm. He came up with the best records. He was a great musician, a great writer, and he was the guy who guided Nat Cole and all the best records that Capitol ever made. So one day I'm in the office with him at Capitol in New York. This is in the afternoon. He had come in from California. And when you're with a record company, you have meeting after meeting with the guy trying to come up with new ideas. What do you want to do next? Right? So Dave says to me, he said, "You know, Bobby, I got a crazy idea for you." He says, "I got to get together with you, discuss." He says, "I think we can make some money with it." I said, "Well, yeah, I'm available." So we got mixed up, and that night he went to the Embers in New York and he heard Jonah Jones. And that was what he was going to tell me to do, play with the mute with a quartet. And it happened to Jonah. It wouldn't have changed anything. I mean, Jonah just happened to have the thing, you know. He was, and still is, wonderful. But they made some very successful albums, and I had to switch to another idea. And after it happened, all the trumpet players wanted to make albums with quartets because Jonah was such a hit. I got to tell you a funny story. Harry James, you know, we musicians like us are like ball players. We're all clannish and we all for each other. We got inside stories. And Harry's always been a very dear friend of mine. He's a wonderful guy. But they told me a story at Capitol that when the quartet thing was hot, Ray Anthony ran into Harry James in California, and he says to him, "Hey, Harry, you know what I'm going to do?" He says, "I'm going to make a quartet album." Harry says to him, "Who's going to play the trumpet?" We're saying it in good fun. You know, Ray Anthony doesn't need anything. But if you're a trumpet player, it's good.
Let's listen to one from that Embers album, If I Had My Way.
Thank you.
Tomorrow, Wednesday and Thursday, there'll be big days at Russo Chevrolet in Windsor Locks. If you've been thinking about a new Chevy, there are days you'll want to remember. For 3 days and 3 days only, Russo will be offering brand new Chevrolets at bargain prices. Perhaps you'll choose the Impala. It's easy to drive, exceptionally roomy and comfortable, with standard power front disc brakes, power steering, and automatic turbo hydromatic transmission. Or what about Caprice, the car that lets you enjoy the sumptuous surroundings of expensive luxury cars without spending nearly as much? Then there's the sleek, smooth-riding Bel Air. Whatever your choice, you'll save by buying at Russo tomorrow, Wednesday, or Thursday. And you can buy knowing you're buying from a dealer who cares about you after the sale. Mention WTIC and you'll receive an additional $50 off the low sale price. R-U-S-S-O, Russo Chevrolet. Take the Bradley exit from I-91, then the first exit to Russo Chevrolet, directly across from Bradley International in Windsor Locks. Bobby Hackett, it's been a long, great career. Do you have any regrets? Anything you'd rather have done?
Oh, never. I loved every note, and I'm going to do it till I get it right.
That's great.
I had an incident not long ago. We were playing at my cousin. I have a cousin who has a very successful restaurant, and we played there for a while. And one night, one of these tough shirts comes up to me. We have a son. I have a son, 23 years old. He's a very wonderful drummer, and I advised him to become a drummer because good drummers you can count in one hand. So this guy come up to the bandstand, and he says to me, geez, did you let your son get into a business like this? I said, look, champ. I said, I don't know what business you're in, but I go to work every night, and I love good music, and I enjoy playing it. I said, I make a better than average living. I said, and I can't think of any line as good as being a musician. It's been my life. It's going to be his life. I said, it's too bad you haven't got the talent, isn't it? And I just made him ashamed that he would say that to me, because I think music is a highly honorable profession. What's better than making nice music for people to enjoy?
Bobby, good luck to you.
Thank you very much, huh?
It's a pleasure to have you here, and I know your schedule's kind of busy, and I was going to come all the way up to Cape Cod to visit you there, but I'm glad you came to Hartford instead.
Never too late. Repay the visit.
Beautiful. We'll see you there.
Thank you.
Keep playing. The story and the sound of Bobby Hackett, now a resident of Chatham, Cape Cod, Massachusetts, and still one of the greatest and one of the most pleasant musicians of them all. Tonight's program, A One-Night Stand with the Big Bands, was edited and produced by Brian Hartnett, engineering by Bob Schirago. A One-Night Stand featuring Bobby Hackett has been brought to you by Russo Chevrolet in Windsor Locks, where you'll find special bargain prices tomorrow, Wednesday, and Thursday. And by the Bushnell Memorial, where the big show of 1936 will feature many of the big names of vaudeville, silent films, the Follies, and the early days of radio on June 13th. Our next one-night stand is coming up on Tuesday night, the 4th of July at 9:05 on WTIC Radio. This is Arnold Dean.